years. Clever of them. Oh, don't look at me like that. The Federation weren't the first to use opium to control a population. The Nikata originated this technique.
What are you talking about?
They didn't teach you.
Shiro looked amused.
But of course they wouldn't. Nikon likes to scrub out all that is embarrassing about its past.
He crossed the room to stand over her, brushing his fingers along the shelves as he walked.
How do you think the Red Emperor kept the Spearleys on their leash? Use your head, my dear. When Spear lost its independence, the Red Emperor sent crates of opium over to the Spearleys as an offering. A gift from the colonizing state to the tributary. This was deliberate. Previously, the Spearleys had only ever ingested their local bark in their ceremonies. They were used to such mild hallucinogens that to them, smoking opium was like drinking wood alcohol. When they tried it, they immediately became addicted. They did anything they could to get more of it. They were slaves to the opium just as much as they were slaves to the Emperor.
Rin's mind reeled. She could not think of any response. She wanted to call Shiro a liar. She wanted to scream at him to stop. But it made sense. It made so much sense.
So you see, our countries are not so different after all,
Shiro said smugly.
The only difference is that we revere shamans. We desire to learn from them, while your empire is terrified and paranoid about the power it possesses. Your empire has culled you and exploited you and made you eliminate each other. I will unleash you. I will grant you freedom to call the goddess you have never been allowed to before.
If you give me freedom, she snarled, the first thing I will do is burn you alive. Her connection to the Phoenix was the last advantage she had. The Federation had raped and burned her country. The Federation had destroyed her school and killed her friends. By now they had most likely razed her hometown to the ground. Only the Pantheon remained sacred. The one thing in the universe that Mugen still had no access to. Rin had been tortured, bound, beaten, and starved. But her mind was her own. Her god was her own. She would die before she betrayed it. Eventually, Shiro grew bored of her. He summoned the guards to drag the prisoners into a cell.
"I will see you both tomorrow," he said cheerfully. "And we will try this again."
Rin spat on his coat as the guards marched her out. Another guard followed with Alton's inert form thrown over his shoulder like an animal carcass. One guard chained Rin's leg to the wall and slammed the cell door shut on them. Beside her, Alton jerked and moaned, muttering incoherently under his breath. Rin cradled his head in her lap and kept a miserable vigil over her fallen commander. Alton did not come to his senses for hours. Many times he cried out, spoke words in the Spearley language that she didn't understand. Then he moaned her name.
Rin.
I'm here, she said, stroking his forehead.
Did he hurt you?
He demanded. She choked back a sob.
No. No. He wanted me to talk. Teach him about the Pantheon. I didn't. But he said he'd just keep hurting you.
It's not the drug that hurts, he said. It's when it wears off.
Then, with a sickening pang in her stomach, she understood. Alton was not lapsing when he smoked opium. No, smoking opium was the only time when he was not in pain. He had lived his entire life in perpetual pain, always longing to have another dose. She had never understood how horrendously difficult it was to be Alton Trengzin, to live under the strain of a furious god constantly screaming for destruction in the back of his mind, while an indifferent narcotic deity whispered promises in his blood. That's why the Spearleys became addicted to opium so easily, she realized. Not because they needed it for their fire. Because for some of them, it was the only time they could get away from their horrible god. Deep down, she had known this, had suspected this ever since she'd learned that Alton didn't need drugs like the rest of the psych did, that Alton's eyes were perpetually bright like poppy flowers. Alton should have been locked into the Chulu Kurik himself a long time ago. But she hadn't wanted to believe, because she needed to trust that her commander was sane. Because without Alton, what was she? In the hours that followed, when the drug seeped out of his bloodstream, Alton suffered. He sweated. He writhed. He seized so violently that Rin had to restrain him to keep him from hurting himself. He screamed. He begged for Shiro to come back. He begged for Rin to help him die.
You can't, she said, panicking. We have to escape here. We have to get out.
His eyes were blank, defeated. Resistance here means suffering, Rin. There is no escape. There is no future. The best you can hope for is that Shiro gets bored and grants you a painless death. She almost did it then. She wanted to end his misery. She couldn't see him tortured like this anymore. Couldn't watch the man she had admired since she set eyes on him reduced to this. She found herself kneeling over his inert torso, hands around his neck. All she had to do was put pressure into her arms, force the air out of his throat, choke the life out of him. He would hardly feel it. He could hardly feel anything anymore. Even as her fingers grasped his skin, he did not resist. He wanted it to end. She had done this once before. She had killed the likeness of him in the guise of the Chimay. But Alton had been fighting then. Then Alton had been a threat. He was not a threat now. Only the tragic, glaring proof that her heroes inevitably let her down. Alton Trengzin was not invincible after all. He had been so good at following orders. They told him to jump and he flew. They told him to fight and he destroyed. But here, at the end, without a purpose and without a ruler, Alton Trengzin was broken. Rin's fingers tensed, but then she trembled and pushed his limp form violently away from her.
How are my darling Spearleys doing? Ready for another round?
Shiro approached their cell, beaming. He was coming from the lab at the opposite end of the hallway. He held several round metallic containers in his arms. They didn't respond.
Would you like to know what those canisters are for?
Shiro asked. His voice remained artificially bright.
Any guesses? Here's a hint. It's a weapon.
Rin glowered at the doctor. Alton stared at the floor. Shiro continued, unfazed.
It's the plague, children. Surely you know what the plague does. First your nose begins to run, and then great welts start growing on your arms, your legs, between your legs. You die from shock when the wounds rupture, or from your own poisoned blood. It takes quite a long time to die down, once it's caught on. But perhaps that was before your time. Nikon has been plague-free for a while now, hasn't it?
Shiro tapped the metal bars.
It took us a devilishly long time to figure out how it spread. Fleas! Can you believe that? Fleas, that latch onto rats, and then spread their little plague particles over everything they touch. Of course, now that we know how it spreads, it's only a hop step to turning it into a weapon. Obviously, it will not do to have the weapon run around without control. We do plan to inhabit your country one day, but when released in some densely populated areas, with the right critical mass. Well, this war will be over much sooner than we anticipated, won't it?
Shiro leaned forward, head resting against the bars.
You have nothing to fight for anymore, he said quietly. Your country is lost. Why do you hold your silence? You have an easy way out of this place. Just cooperate with me. Tell me how you summon the fire.
I'll die first, Rin spat.
What are you defending?
Shiro asked.
You owe Nikon nothing. What were you to them? What were the Spearleys to them ever? Freaks! Outcasts!
Rin stood up.
We fight for the Empress, she said. I'm a militia soldier until the day I die.
The Empress?
Shiro looked faintly puzzled.
Have you really not figured it out?
Figured what out?
Rin snapped, even as Alton silently mouthed, no. But she had taken the bait. She had risen to the doctor's provocation, and she could tell from the way Shiro's eyes gleamed that he had been waiting for this moment.
Have you even asked how we knew you were at the Chulu Kurik?
Shiro asked.
Who must have given us that information? Who was the only other person who knew of that wonderful mountain?
Rin gaped at him, open-mouthed, while the truth pieced itself together in her mind. She could see Alton puzzling it out, too. His eyes widened as he came to the same realization that she did.
No, said Alton. You're lying.
Your precious Empress betrayed you,
Shiro said with relish.
You were betrayed.
That's impossible, said Alton. We served her. We killed for her.
Your Empress gave you up. You and your precious band of shamans. You were sold, my dear Spearleys. Just like Spear was sold. Just like your empire was sold.
You're lying!
Alton flung himself at the bars. Fire ignited across his body, flared out in tentacles that almost reached the guards. Alton continued to scream, and the fire licked wider and wider. And although the metal did not melt, Rin thought she saw the bars begin to bend. Shiro shouted a command in Mugini. Three guards rushed to the cell. As one worked to unlock the gate, another sloshed a bucket of water over Alton. Once he was doused, the third rushed in to pull Alton's arms back behind his head while the first jammed a needle into his neck. Alton jerked and dropped to the floor. The guards turned to Rin. Rin thought she saw Shiro's mouth moving, yelling,
No, not her!
Before she, too, felt the needle sink into her neck. The rush she felt was nothing like poppy seeds. With poppy seeds, she still had to concentrate on clearing her mind. With poppy seeds, it took conscious effort to ascend to the Pantheon. Heroin was nowhere near as subtle. Heroin evicted her from her own body so that she had no choice but to seek refuge in the realm of spirit. And she realized, with a fierce joy, that in attempting to sedate her, Shiro's guards had set her free. She found Alton in the other realm. She felt him. She knew the pattern of him as well as she knew her own. She had not always known the shape of him. She had loved the version of him she'd constructed for herself. She had admired him. She had idolized him. She had adored an idea of him, an archetype, a version of him that was invulnerable. But now she knew the truth. She knew the realness of Alton and his vulnerabilities, and most of all, his pain. And still she loved him. She had mirrored herself against him,
molded herself after him, one spearly after another. She had emulated his cruelty, his hatred, and his vulnerability. She knew him, finally knew all of him, and that was how she found him. Alton.
Rin.
She could feel him all around her, a hard edge, a deeply wounded aura, and yet a comforting presence. Alton's form appeared before her as if he stood across a very large field. He walked, or floated, toward her. Space and distance did not exist in this realm. Not really. But her mind had to interpret it as such for her to orient herself. She did not have to read the anguish in his eyes. She felt it. Alton did not keep his spirit closed off, the way Chagan did. He was an open book, available for her to peruse, as if he were offering himself up for her to try to understand. She understood. She understood his pain and his misery, and she understood why all he wanted to do now was die. But she had no patience for it. Rin had given up the luxury of fear a long, long time ago. She had wanted to give up so many times. It would have been easier. It would have been painless. But throughout everything, the one thing she had held on to was her anger. And she knew one truth. She would not die like this. She would not die without vengeance. "They killed our people," she said. "They sold us. Since Tirzah, Spear has been a pawn in the Empire's geopolitical chess game. We were disposable. We were tools. Tell me that doesn't make you furious." He looked exhausted.
"I am sick with fury," he said. "And I am sick knowing that there is nothing I can do."
"You've blinded yourself. You're a Spearly. You have power," she said. "You have the anger of all of Spear. Show me how to use it. Give it to me."
"You'll die."
"Then I will die on my feet," she said. "I will die with flames in my hand and fury in my heart. I will die fighting for the legacy of my people, rather than on Shiro's operating table, drugged and wasted. I will not die a coward. And neither will you. Alton, look at me. We are not like Jiang. We are not like Tirzah." Alton lifted his head then.
"Maiden and Tirzah," he whispered. "The queen who abandoned her people."
"Would you abandon them?" she pressed. "You heard what Shiro said. The Empress didn't just sell us out. She sold the entire psyche. Shiro won't stop until he has every Nakata shaman locked up in this hellhole. When you are gone, who will protect them? Who will protect Ramsa? Suni? Chagan?" She felt it from him then, a stab of defiance, a flicker of resolve. That was all she needed.
"The Phoenix isn't only the god of fire," he said. "It is the god of revenge. And there is a power, born of centuries of festering hatred that only a Spearly can access. I have tapped into it many times, but never in full. It would consume you. It would burn at you until there was nothing left."
"Give it to me," she said immediately, hungrily.
"I can't," he said. "It's not mine to give. That power belongs to the Spearlies."
"Then take me to them," Rin demanded. And so he took her back. In the realm of dreams, time ceased to hold meaning. Alton took her back centuries. He took her back into the only spaces where their ancestors still existed. In ancient memory. Being led by Alton was not the same as being led by Chagan. Chagan was a sure guide, more native to the spirit world than the world of the living. With Chagan she had felt as if she were being dragged along, and that if she didn't obey, Chagan would have shattered her mind. But with Alton,
Alton did not feel even like a separate presence. Rather, he and she made two parts of a much greater whole. They were two small instances of the grand ancient entity of all that was Spear, hurtling through the world of spirit to rejoin their kind. When space and time again became tangible concepts to her, Rin perceived that they were at a campfire. She saw drums. She heard people chanting and singing. And she knew that song. She had been taught that song when she was a little girl. She could not believe she had ever forgotten that song. All Spearleys could sing that song before their fifth birthday. No, not her. Rin had never learned that song. This was not her recollection. She was living inside the remembrance of a Spearley who had lived many, many years ago. This was a shared memory. This was an illusion. So was this dance, and so too was the man who held her by the fire. He danced with her, spinning her about in great arcs, then pulling her back against his warm chest. He could not be Alton, and yet he had Alton's face, and she was certain that she had always known him. She had never been taught to dance, but somehow she knew the steps. The night sky was lit up with stars like little torches, a million tiny campfires scattered across the darkness, 1,000 Isles of Spear, 1,000 fireside dances. Years ago, Jiang had told her that the spirits of the dead dissolved back into the void. But not the spirits of Spear. The Spearleys refused to let go of their illusions, refused to forget about the material world, because Spear's shamans couldn't be at peace until they got their vengeance. She saw faces in the shadow. She saw a sad-looking woman who looked like her, sitting beside an old man wearing a crescent pendant around his neck. Rin tried to look closer, but their faces were blurred, those of people she only half remembered. "Is this what it was like?" she asked out loud. The voices of the ghosts answered as one. This was the golden age of Spear. This was Spear before Tirza. Before the massacre. She could have wept at the beauty of it. There was no madness here. Only fires and dances.
"We could stay here," Alton said. "We could stay here forever. We wouldn't have to go back."
In that moment, it was all she wanted. Their bodies would waste away and become nothing. Shiro would deposit their corpses into a waste chamber and incinerate them. Then, when the last part of them had been given to the Phoenix, once their ashes were scattered in the winds, they would be free. "We could," she agreed. "We could be lost to history. But you'd never do that, would you?"
"They wouldn't take us now," he said. "Do you feel them? Can you feel their anger?" She could. The ghosts of Spear were so sad, but they were also furious. "This is why we are strong. We draw our strength from centuries and centuries of unforgotten injustices. Our task, our very reason for being, is to make those deaths mean something. After us, there will be no Spear. Only a memory."
She had thought she understood Alton's power, but only now did she realize the depth of it. The weight of it. He was burdened with a legacy of 1,000,000 souls forgotten by history. Vengeful souls screaming for justice. The ghosts of Spear were chanting now, a deep and sorrowful song in the language she was born too late to understand, but connected to her very bones. The ghosts spoke to them for an eternity. Years passed. No time passed at all. Their ancestors imparted all that they knew of Spear, all that had ever been remembered of their people. They instilled in her centuries of history and culture and religion. They told her what she had to do. "Our God is an angry God,"
said the woman who looked like Rin. It will not let this injustice rest. It demands vengeance.
You must go to the Isle,
said the old man with the crescent pendant.
You must go to the temple. Find the Pantheon. Call the Phoenix, and wake the ancient fault lines on which Spear lies. The Phoenix will only answer to you. It has to.
The man and woman faded back into the blur of brown faces. The ghosts of Spear began to sing as one, mouths moving in unison. Rin could not determine the meaning of the song from the words, but she felt it. It was a song of vengeance. It was a horrible song. It was a wonderful song. The ghosts gave Rin their blessing, and it made the rush from the heroine feel like a feathery touch in comparison. She had been granted a power beyond imagination. She had the strength of their ancestors. She held within her every Spearly who had died on that terrible day, and every Spearly who had ever lived on the Dead Island. They were the Phoenix's chosen people. The Phoenix thrived on anger, and Rin possessed that in abundance. She reached for Alton. They were of one mind and one purpose. They forced their way back into the world of the living. Their eyes flared open at the same time. One of Shiro's assistants had been bending over them, back on the table in Shiro's laboratory. The flames roiling from their bodies immolated him immediately, catching his hair and clothes so that when he reeled away from them, screaming, every bit of him was on fire. Flames licked out in every direction. They caught the chemicals in the laboratory and combusted, shattering glass. They caught the alcohol used to sterilize wounds and spread rapidly on the fumes. The jar in the corner bearing the pickled man trembled from the heat and exploded, spilling its vile contents out onto the floor. The fumes of the embalming fluid caught fire too, lighting up the room in an earnest blaze. The lab assistant ran into the hallway, screaming for Shiro to save him. Rin writhed and twisted where she lay. The straps keeping her down could not bear the heat of the flame at such a close angle. They snapped, and she fell off the table, picked herself up, and turned just as Shiro rushed into the room clutching a reloading crossbow. He shifted his aim from Alton to Rin and back again. Rin tensed, but Shiro did not pull the trigger. Whether out of inexperience or reluctance, Rin did not know.
Beautiful,
he marveled in a low voice. The fire reflected in his hungry eyes, and for a moment made him seem as if he too possessed the scarlet eyes of the Spearlies.
Shiro!
Alton roared. The doctor did not move as Alton advanced. Rather, he lowered his crossbow, held his arms out to Alton as if welcoming a son into his embrace. Alton grabbed his tormentor by the face and squeezed. Flames poured from his hands, white-hot flames, surrounding the doctor's head like a crown. First Alton's hands left fingerprints of black around Shiro's temples, and then the heat burned through bone and Alton's fingers bored holes through Shiro's skull. Shiro's eyes bulged. His arms twitched madly. He dropped the crossbow. Alton pressed Shiro's skull between his hands. Shiro's head split open with a wet crack. The twitching stopped. Alton dropped the body and stepped away from it. He turned to Rin. His eyes burned a brighter red than they ever had before.
Okay, he said. Now we run.
Rin scooped the crossbow off the ground and followed Alton out of the operating room. Where's the exit?
No clue, Alton said. Look for light.
They ran for their lives, turning corners at random. The research facility was a massive complex, far larger than Rin had imagined. As they ran, Rin saw that the hallway containing their cells was only one corridor in the maze-like interior. They passed empty barracks, many operating tables, and storage rooms stacked with canisters of gas. Alarm bells sounded across the entire complex, alerting the soldiers to the breach. Finally, they found an exit, a side door in an empty corridor. It was boarded shut,
but Alten pushed Rin aside and then kicked it down. She jumped out and helped him climb through.
Over there!
A Federation patrol group got sight of them and raced in their direction. Alten grabbed the crossbow from Rin and aimed it at the patrol group. Three soldiers dropped to the ground, but the others advanced over their comrades' dead bodies. The crossbow made a hollow clicking noise.
Shit, Alten said.
The patrol group drew closer. Rin and Alten were starved, weakened, still half-drugged. And yet they fought. Back to back. They moved as perfect complements to each other. They achieved a better synchronization than Rin had even with Najah. For Najah knew how she moved only by observing her. Alten didn't have to. Alten knew by instinct who she was, how she would fight. Because they were the same. They were two parts of a whole. They were Spearleys. They dispatched the patrol of five, only to see another squadron of 20 approach them from the side of the building.
Well, we can't kill all of them, said Alten.
Rin wasn't sure about that. They kept running anyway. Her feet were scraped raw from the cobbled floor. Alten gripped her arm as they ran, dragging her forward. The cobblestones became sand, then wooden planks. They were at a port. They were by the sea. They needed to get to the water, to the sea. Needed to swim across the narrow strait. Spear was so close. You must go to the isle. You must go to the temple. They reached the end of the pier and stopped. The night was lit up with torches. It seemed as if the entire Federation army had assembled by the docks. Muganese soldiers behind the pier, Muganese ships in the water. There were hundreds of them. They were hundreds against two. The odds were not simply bad. They were insurmountable. Rin felt a sensation of crushing despair. She couldn't breathe under the weight of it. This was where it ended. This was Spear's last stand. Alten hadn't let go of her arm. Blood dripped from his eyes. Blood dropped from his mouth.
Look, he pointed. Do you see that star? That's the constellation of the Phoenix.
She raised her head.
Taken as your guide, he said. Spear is southeast of here. It'll be a long swim.
What are you talking about? She demanded. We'll swim together. You'll guide me. His hand closed around her fingers. He held them tight for a moment and then let go.
No, he said. I'll finish my duty.
Panic twisted her insides.
Alten, no!
She couldn't stop the onslaught of hot tears, but Alten wasn't looking at her. He was gazing out at the assembled army.
Tirza didn't save our people, he said. I couldn't save our people. But this comes close.
Alten, please!
It will be harder for you, Alten said. You'll have to live with the consequences. But you're brave. You're the bravest person I've ever met.
Don't leave me!
She begged. He leaned forward and grasped her face in both hands. She thought for a bizarre moment that he was going to kiss her. He didn't. He pressed his forehead against hers for a long time. She closed her eyes. She drank in the sensation of her skin against his. She seared it into her memory.
You're so much stronger than I am,
said Alten. Then he let her go. She shook her head frantically.
No, I'm not! It's you! I need you!
Someone's got to destroy that research facility, Rin.
He stepped away from her. Arms stretched forward. He walked toward the fleet.
No!
Rin begged.
No!
Alten took off at a run. A hail of arrows erupted from the Federation force. At the same moment, Alten lit up like a torch. He called the Phoenix, and the Phoenix came, enveloping him, embracing him, loving him, bringing him back into the fold. Alten was a silhouette in the light.
a shadow of a man. She thought she saw him look back toward her. She thought she saw him smile. She thought she heard a bird's cackle. Rin saw in the flames the image of Maiden and Tirza. She was weeping.
The fire doesn't give. The fire takes, and takes, and takes.
Rin screamed a wordless scream. Her voice was lost in the fire. A great column of flame erupted from the site of Alten's immolation. A wave of heat rolled out in every direction, bowling over the Federation soldiers like they were straw. It hit Rin like a punch to the gut, and she pitched backward into the inky black water. Chapter 25. She swam for hours, days, an eternity. She remembered only the beginning, the initial shock as her body slammed into the water, how she thought she had died because she could not make her body obey, and because her skin prickled where it hit the water as if she had been flayed alive. If she craned her head, she could see the research base burning. It was a beautiful burn, crimson and gold licking up in tendrils to the softly dark sky. At first, Rin swam the way she had been trained to at the academy, a stroke with a minimized profile so her arms would not exit the water. The Federation archers would shoot her dead in the water if they saw her, if there were any left alive. Then the fatigue set in, and she simply moved her limbs to keep afloat, to keep drifting, without any consideration for technique. Her strokes became mechanical, automated and formless. Even the water had warmed from the heat of Alten's conflagration. It felt like a bath, like a soft bed. She drifted, and thought it might be nice to drown. The ocean floor would be quiet. Nothing would hurt. There would be no phoenix, no war, nothing at all. Only silence. In those warm, dark depths, she would feel no loss at all. But the sight of Alten walking to his death was seared into her memory. It burned at the forefront of her thoughts, more raw and painful than the salt water seeping into her open wounds. He commanded her from the grave, whispering orders even now. She did not know if she merely hallucinated his voice, or if he was truly with her, guiding her.
Keep swimming. Follow the wings. Don't stop. Don't give up. Keep moving.
She trained her eyes on the constellation of the Phoenix.
Southeast. You must swim to the southeast.
The stars became torches, and the torches became fire, and she thought she saw her god.
I feel you, said the Phoenix, undulating before her. I sense your sacrifice, your pain, and I want it. Bring it to me. You are close, so close.
Rin reached a shaking hand toward the god, but then something jolted in her mind, something primal and terrified.
Stay away, screamed the woman. Stay far away from here.
No, Rin thought. You can't keep me away. I'm coming. She floated senselessly in the black water, arms and legs spread-eagled to remain afloat. She wavered in and out of reality. Her spirit went flying. She lost all sense of direction. She had no destination. She went wherever she was pulled, as if by a magnetic power, as if by an entity beyond her control. She saw visions. She saw a storm cloud that looked like a man gathering over the mountains, with four cyclones branching off like limbs. And when she stared at the source, two intelligent spots of cerulean peered back at her. Too bright to be natural. Too malicious to be anything but a god. She saw a great dam with four gorges, the largest structure she had ever seen. She saw water gushing in every direction, flooding the plains.
She saw Chagan and Kata standing somewhere high, watching the fragments of the broken dam stream into the shifting river mouth. She brushed against them, wondering, and Chagan jerked his head up.
Alton?
Chagan asked hopefully. Kata looked to her brother.
What is it?
Chagan ignored his sister, gazing around as if he could see Rin. But his pale eyes went straight through her. He was looking for something that no longer existed.
Alton, are you there?
She tried to say something, but no sound came out. She didn't have a mouth. She didn't have a body. Scared, she flitted away. And then the void was pulling her through again so that she couldn't have gone back if she'd tried. She flew through the present to the past. She saw a great temple, a temple built of stone and blood. She saw a familiar woman, tall and magnificent, brown-skinned and long-limbed. She wore a crown of scarlet feathers and ash-colored beads. She was weeping.
I won't, said the woman.
I will not sacrifice the world for the sake of this island.
The phoenix shrieked with a fury so great that Rin trembled under its naked rage.
I will not be defied. I will smite those who have broken their promises. And you, have broken the greatest vow of all, hissed the god. I condemn you. You will never know peace.
The woman screamed, collapsed to her knees, and clutched at something within her, as if trying to claw her very heart out. She glowed from inside like a burning coal. Light poured through her eyes, her mouth, until cracks appeared in her skin and she shattered like rock. Rin would have screamed too, if she had a mouth. The phoenix turned its attention to her, just as the void dragged her away again. She hurtled through time and space. She saw a shock of white hair, and then everything stood still. The gatekeeper hung in a vacuum, frozen in a state of suspended animation, a place next to nowhere and on the way to everywhere.
Why did you abandon us?
She cried.
You could have helped us. You could have saved us.
His eyes shot open and found her. She did not know how long he stared at her. His eyes bored into the back of her soul, searched through all of her. And she stared back. She stared back. And what she saw nearly broke her. Jung was no mortal. He was something old, something ancient, something very, very powerful. And yet at the same time he was her teacher. He was that frail and ageless man whom she knew as human. He reached out for her and she almost touched him, but her fingers glided through his and touched nothing. And she thought with a sickening fright that she was drifting away again. But he uttered a word, and she hung still. Then their fingers met, and she had a body again, and she could feel. Feel his hands cup her cheeks and his forehead press against hers. She felt it acutely when he grasped her shoulders and shook her, hard.
Wake up, he said. You're going to drown.
She hauled herself out of the water onto hot sand. She took a breath, and her throat burned as if she had drunk a gallon of peppercorn sauce. She whimpered and swallowed, and it felt like a fistful of rocks was trying to scrape its way down her esophagus. She curled into herself, rolled over, hauled herself to her feet, and attempted a step forward. Something crunched under her foot. She lurched forward and tripped onto the ground. Dazed, she glanced around. Her ankle had wedged inside something. She wiggled her foot and lifted it up. She dragged a skull out of the sand. She had stepped inside a dead man's jaw. She shrieked and fell backward. Her vision pulsed black. Her eyes were open, but they had shut down, refusing all sensory input. Bright flashes of light swam before her eyes. Her fingers scrabbled through the sand. It was full of hard little objects. She lifted them out and brought them to her eyes, squinting until her vision returned. They weren't pebbles. Little bits of white stuck up in the sand everywhere she looked. Bones. Bones. Everywhere. She was kneeling in a massive graveyard. She trembled so hard the sand beneath her vibrated. She doubled over onto her knees and gagged. Her stomach was so shrunken that with every dry heave, she felt as if she had been stabbed with a knife.
Get out of the target line.
Was that Alton's voice echoing in her head? Or her own thoughts? The voice was harsh, commanding. She obeyed.
You are visible against white sand. Take cover in the trees.
She dragged herself across the sand, heaving every time her fingers rolled over a skull. She shook with tearless sobs, too dehydrated to cry.
Go to the temple. You'll find the way. All paths lead to the temple.
Paths? What paths? Whatever walkways had once existed had long ago been reclaimed by the island. She knelt there, staring stupidly at the foliage.
You're not looking hard enough.
She crawled up and down the tree line on her hands and knees, trying to find any indication of something that might have been a trail. Her fingers found a flat rock, the size of her head, just visible under a veneer of grass. Then another. And another. She hauled herself to her feet and stumbled along the path, holding the surrounding trees for support. The rocks were hard and jagged, and they cut her feet so that she left bloody footprints as she walked. Her head swam. She had been so long without food or drink that she hardly remembered she had a body anymore. She saw, or imagined, grotesque animals. Animals that should not exist. Birds with two heads. Rodents with many tails. Spiders with a thousand eyes. She continued following the path until she felt as if she'd walked the length of the entire island.
All paths lead to the temple,
the ancestors had told her. But when she came to the clearing at the center, she found only ruins among the sand. She saw shattered rocks engraved in a calligraphy she could not read, a stone entrance that led nowhere. The Federation must have torn down the temple 20 years ago. It must have been the first thing they did, after they had butchered the Spearleys. The Federation had to destroy the Spearleys' place of worship. They had to remove their source of power, to ruin and smash it so completely that no one on Spear could seek the Phoenix for help. Rin ran through the ruins, searching for a door, some remnant of the holy area, but she found nothing. Nothing was there. She sank to the ground, too numb to move.
No, not like this.
Not after all she had been through. She had almost begun to cry when she felt the sand giving way under her hands. It was sliding, falling somewhere. She laughed suddenly. She laughed so hard that she gasped in pain. She fell over on her side and clutched her stomach, shrieking with relief.
The temple was underground.
She fashioned herself a torch from a stick of dry wood and held it before her as she descended the stairs of the temple. She climbed down for a long time. The air became cool and dry. She rounded a corner and could no longer see sunlight. She found it difficult to breathe. She thought of the Chulu Kurik, and her head reeled. She had to lean against the stone and took several heaving breaths before her panic subsided. This was not the prison under the stone. She was not walking away from her god. No, she was getting closer. The inner chamber was entirely devoid of sound. She could hear none of the ocean. Not the rustling of wind or sounds of wildlife above. but silent though it was, the temple was the opposite of the Chulu Kurik. The silence in the temple was lucid, enhancing. It helped her focus. She could almost see her way upward, as if the path to the gods were as mundane as the dirt on which she trod. The wall formed a circle, just like the Pantheon, but she saw only one plinth. The Spearleys needed only one. The entire room was a shrine to the Phoenix. Its likeness had been carved in stone in the far wall, a bas-relief thrice her size. The bird's head was turned sideways, its profile etched into the chamber. Its eye was huge, wild, and mad. Fear struck her as she looked into that eye. It seemed furious. It seemed alive. Rin's hands moved instinctively to her belt, but she didn't have Poppy with her. She realized she didn't need it, the same way that Alten had never needed it. Her very presence inside the temple placed her halfway to the gods already. She entered the trance simply by gazing into the furious eyes of the Phoenix. Her spirit flew up until it was stopped. When she saw the woman, this time she spoke first. "Not this again," Rin said. "You can't stop me. You know where I stand." "I warn you one more time," said the ghost of Mairin and Tirza. "Do not give yourself to the Phoenix." "Shut up and let me through," Rin said. Starved and dehydrated, she had no patience for warnings. Tirza touched her cheek. Her expression was desperate. "To give your soul to the Phoenix is to enter hell. It consumes you. You will burn eternally." "I'm already in hell," Rin said hoarsely. "And I don't care." Tirza's face twisted in grief. "Blood of my blood, daughter of mine, do not go down this path." "I'm not going down your path." "You did nothing," said Rin. "You were too scared to do what you needed to do. You sold our people. You acted from cowardice." "Not cowardice," Tirza said. "I acted from a higher principle." "You acted from selfishness," Rin screamed. "If you hadn't given up Spear, our people might still be alive right now." "If I hadn't given up Spear, the world would be burning down," said Tirza. "When I was young, I thought that I would have done it. I sat where you sit now. I came to this temple and prayed to our god. And the Phoenix came to me too, for I was his chosen ruler. But I realized what I was about to do, and I turned the fire on myself. I burned away my body, my power, and Spear's hope for freedom. I gave my country to the Red Emperor. And I maintained peace."
"How is death and slavery peace?" Rin spat.
"I have lost my friends and my country. I have lost everything I care about. I don't want peace. I want revenge."
"Revenge will only bring you pain."
"What do you know?" Rin sneered. "Do you think you brought peace? You left your people to become slaves. You let the Red Emperor exploit and abuse and mistreat them for a millennium. You've set Spear on a path that made centuries of suffering inevitable. If you hadn't been such a fucking coward, I wouldn't have to do this. And Alten would still be alive."
Maiden and Tirza's eyes blazed red. But Rin moved first. A wall of flame erupted between them. Tirza's spirit dissolved in the fire. And then she was before her god. The Phoenix was so much more beautiful up close, and so much more terrible. As she watched, it unfurled its great wings behind her back and spread them. They stretched to the ends of the room. The phoenix tilted its head to the side and fixed her with its ember eyes. Rin saw entire civilizations rise and fall in those eyes. She saw cities built from the ground up, then burning, then crumbling into ash.
"I've been waiting for you for a long time," said her god.
"I would have come sooner," said Rin, "but I was warned against you. My master..."
"Your master was a coward, but not your commander."
"You know what Alton did," Rin said in a low whisper. "You have him forever now."
"The boy could never have done what you are able to do," said the phoenix. "The boy was broken in body and spirit. The boy was a coward."
"But he called you..."
"And I answered. I gave him what he wanted."
Alton had won. Alton had achieved in death what he couldn't do in life because Alton, Rin suspected, had been tired of living. He couldn't wage the protracted war of vengeance that the phoenix demanded. So he'd sought a martyr's death and gotten it.
"It's harder to keep living."
"And what do you want from me?"
the phoenix inquired. "I want an end to the Federation."
"How do you intend to achieve that?"
She glowered at the god. The phoenix was playing with her, forcing her to spell out her demand, forcing her to specify exactly what abomination she wanted to commit. Rin forced the last parts of what was human out of her soul and gave way to her hatred. Hating was so easy. It filled a hole inside her. It let her feel something again. It felt so good. "Total victory," she said. "It's what you want, isn't it?"
"What I want?"
The phoenix sounded amused.
"The gods do not want anything. The gods merely exist. We cannot help what we are. We are pure essence, pure element. You humans inflict everything on yourselves, and then blame us afterward. Every calamity has been man-made. We do not force you to do anything. We have only ever helped."
"This is my destiny," Rin said with conviction. "I'm the last Spearly. I have to do this. It is written."
"Nothing is written," said the phoenix. "You humans always think you're destined for things, for tragedy or for greatness. Destiny is a myth. Destiny is the only myth. The gods choose nothing. You chose. You chose to take the exam. You chose to come to Synagard. You chose to pledge lore. You chose to study the paths of the gods. And you chose to follow your commander's demands over your master's warnings. At every critical juncture, you were given an option. You were given a way out. Yet you picked precisely the roads that led you here. You are at this temple, kneeling before me, only because you wanted to be. And you know that should you give the command, I will call something terrible. I will wreak a disaster to destroy the island of Mugen completely, as thoroughly as Spear was destroyed. By your choice, many will die."
"Many more will live," Rin said, and she was nearly certain that it was true. And even if it wasn't, she was willing to take that gamble. She knew she would bear full responsibility for the murders she was about to commit, bear the weight of them for as long as she lived. But it was worth it. For the sake of her vengeance, it was worth it. This was divine retribution for what the Federation had wreaked on her people. This was her justice. "They aren't people," she whispered. "They're animals. I want you to make them burn."
every last one.
And what will you give me in return?
Inquired the phoenix.
The price to alter the fabric of the world is steep.